Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday show, and this is Graham Wallace.
This is Frank the Star.
That's right.
We've done a Saturday show before. Hey.
Yeah.
Welcome to the makeup show on Desperate Housewitches. Desperate Housewitches is not a GPG, R, or an X-rated show. You're getting one solid hour of Amy Blackthorne today, but before that, we are brought to you by the one, the only, the incredible guest from last night. The amazing Dorian Wallace. Dorian Wallace. You are amazing. The amazing
well, thank
Dorian
you.
Morrison. God, those names are similar today. I don't know why. I never confuse them. Wow. Okay. So, Dorothy Morrison, who was with us last night, wrote Utterly Wicked, and Utterly Wicked is being re-released, and the person who wrote the foreword for it is Amy Blackthorne, who's our guest this afternoon. Where is our guest anyway, sis?
I don't see her just yet.
Okay, let me ding-a-ling-a-ling-long on her.
Ding-a-ling-a-ling-long.
And say, you know what I mean. But yeah, so this is a makeup show because I got very, very sick the last time we were supposed to have her on. And today was the makeup show. And we are waiting for her to arrive. We told her we would do the entire hour with her, waiting for her to jump on. Oh, God. She's like, what's the number? Can you ding her, please, with the number?
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you.
Sis is sending it now.
It's in your chat, my love. I mean, I know it's in this thread. I know it is, Miss Blackthorne.
That's okay. Yeah, no problem sending it to her again.
Thank you.
And there we go.
Yay. So anyway, it is all Yule, blessed Yule to all while Sis goes looking for the number to our shit. Anyway, so yes, we are, as you can see, we're terribly prepared. We are actually hilarious, right? So we're both getting over being sick because she had it, now I have it, my husband has it, her husband had it. So they passed it around over there, and now it's being passed around over here. So I hope everybody stays incredibly healthy and double up on your zinc and your vitamin E, which I did. And I still got this crap. But anyway, so this was a reschedule from me being sick, and now I'm friggin' sick again. Not fun. But we'll live. Did you send it, sis?
Yes. There she is. Let's bring her on. Hello, Amy.
Hey.
Hi.
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 How are you?
Hi. I'm
amazing. How are you?
I'm okay. I am actually sick.
I heard the tail end of that. Can you
repeat
it again?
Yeah, I am.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. And my husband
is not okay.
It's just, you know, hilarious. But we'll both be fine for the, you know, for the visiting when it happens later this week. So,
yeah.
What? So we are so happy to have you. Thank you for being willing to reschedule.
Of course.
It's been a little tight this year. My gosh. So, okay. You are the author of Black Swords Botanical Magic, you are the author of Sacred Smoke. So my understanding is you got something else to talk about too.
I always have something to talk about. Right now, and any minute, my manuscript for Blackthorn's Botanical Brews is going to my fabulous, amazing editor, Miss Judica Ellis. She will have it in her hot little hands any minute, and I cannot wait for everyone to see this.
Wow. I can't wait to hold it in my hands.
I can't wait to get an autographed copy. Wait a second. So let's talk before we launch into Blackthorn's Botanical Brews, which is, I'm sorry, for somebody who's sick, that's a bit of a mouthful, but I like it. Let's spend a few minutes talking about Sacred Smoke, because I have to get my copy of that too.
So this fabulous tome is the sort of the outreach of Blackthorn's Botanical Magic, because I found myself, even though it was designed to be a book on essential oil magic, I kept throwing in incense recipes. Like these fabulous little tidbits just sort of fell into the book. And then I found myself having to stop and cut things out and remove them, and like, this is an essential oil book, this is not an incense book. And I finally stopped and said, you know, if there's going to be these recipes, if there's going to be the ritual action of smoke, it should really have its own book. So this fabulous little book was born out of the idea that I wanted to create not just more smell in the world, because, you know, we all know scent is my thing.
Yes.
What I wanted was to empower people to create their own authentic practice surrounding smoke that wasn't appropriative, but was empowering and something that was yours and yours alone. So we start in the very beginning with one herb, one spice, one piece, and building a practice from there, from square one. You know, sit down with some clove or some lavender and a journal and figure out how this smell, the smell of this burning material affects you. Do you love it? Do you hate it? Do you feel surrounded in comforting blankets? Or do you feel like you got to, you know, get up and clean the house? Like, each person will have very, very specific and detailed experiences around just the simple explanation and invocation of scent. So because everyone has their own experience with these things, everyone's going to have their own practice around them. So I can tell you what is good for making sure your house doesn't have ghosts in it, or I can tell you how to empower yourself to really move into a new job space. But if you hate the smell, you're not going to use it. You're going to have the opposite reaction that you're going for. This is so specific to you. You really have to delve in there and see what you think about things.
Yeah. Wow. I never think about it from that perspective.
Yeah, and that's interesting, because I have scents are very important to me, you know, even though I have like a weird variation, like, I don't know, I like the smell of rubbing alcohol, new tires, you know, weird stuff that normally most people, so yeah, that's interesting. You know, to have the different variables to what your specifications are, what you feel connected to.
And there's a reason for it. When you smell something, when your one molecule of scent is all that's needed to identify it, one molecule hits the back of your nose, and before you can get to recognition, before you can say, oh, that's lavender, your brain has to file through the Rolodex of all the smells you've ever smelled until you get to that scent. Because every day is a piece of paper in a box. And on that piece of paper is written everything you smelled that day. So the piece of paper on top says lavender and you smell lavender, you don't have to go very far. But if the smell that you encountered is circus peanuts from when you were seven and you went to the circus, you're going to have to go back a little farther. But you have to process through all of those memories of smell before you can get to recognition. That's why smell is our most powerful sense that's tied to our emotions, because it's a visceral reaction. Your whole body remembers that smell. There's good and there's bad with that. The good thing is that you can experience the childhood joy of, you know, banana now and later as an adult.
What's
more empowering is that if you have a traumatic experience that is associated with a certain smell, when you smell that smell and you have that reaction, you're not remembering what happened. You're remembering the last time you remembered that. So after time, it becomes a copy of a copy of a copy, and you can process out of that those feelings and those associations. You can make that go away with a little work.
I never thought about that. I had no idea you could process out of a bad memory like that.
Absolutely.
That sounds, wow. Because, I agree with you. I get a lot of everything from a feeling which is related to a fragrance. And sometimes, you know, you just, when something traumatic happens, it's interesting what you do remember. You could remember not even necessarily the thing itself so much as the feeling and the fragrance of it.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. But, yeah, you know, it does. You said circus peanuts, and it's funny because that triggered the last time I thought about circus peanuts, and I smelled something in the air, and it was like, what is that? Because for a minute, it's like, because you get older and some of the synapses don't work as quickly, and it's like, what is, you know the scent immediately, and you try to identify it, and it's like, it takes an extra minute the further back it is, is what I'm relating that to, and it's true.
Yeah.
And then when you remember it, it's like, oh, yeah, it's great, and then it moves on quicker than it used to, as opposed to a lingering thing that was a lot sooner, just like you said. And because I love the scent of kefi, which is Egyptian temple incense.
But
I like a very specific kefi that I don't think I can get anymore. So I'm like constantly on this search for this powdered kefi. I have some of it, and some of it that I have is like over 25 years old, and it's wrapped up tight, and it still smells amazing. I also quit smoking since I bought it, so it smells even stronger to me in the last 10 years, which I know is a mind trick. When you stop smoking, you can suddenly smell again. But you find, you know, I don't know if you ever actually were a cigarette smoker. Probably not, because you're smarter than
me.
see, that's what I'm saying. But I noticed that, you know, once I stopped smoking, I became a lot more sensitive to everything. A lot more aware.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say your scent organs actually rebuild themselves completely every about 60 days. So you're being able to replace the hairs in your nose and the you're reformatting your scent organ. All of that is absolutely a real thing.
Yeah, it's been amazing because food is different now. You don't use as much salt because you can actually taste things. But the ability to smell something or anything is just incredibly enhanced. Like, it's actually a normal person's, but because you haven't had it, if you were a smoker for any number of years, you know what I mean. It's like all of a sudden you're reawakened all over again. So it's kind of a joyful new discovery after you beat your body up for no apparent reason. But, do most people love lavender? Because I love lavender a lot, and it seems to be one of the fragrances that people use to calm down, but I was wondering if there were other things aside from that that, you know, are more universal. I know scent is a pretty individual thing, but there could be some things that are universal.
Absolutely. One of my favorites is rosemary. You'll find that along with lavender, so herbs that have those camphoraceous notes in them are the ones that really jump out at us to say, hey, this is, it's not just clean smelling, it's comforting. It's funny, the one of the more universal plants out there for magical purposes is also rose, and I'm deathly allergic to it. And so it's funny, the reactions that I have. My one of my best friends in the whole world swears that this is, I must have assassinated the Pope in a former life. This is some horrible revenge for something I must have done in a former life. I break out in vicious hives. It's bad. Like my throat closes up. It's just, it's bad news.
That's real anaphylaxis at work. Wow.
Yes.
That's a shame.
My mother and my sister
will
have it.
Oh my gosh. There are things that are, like, every once in a while, I catch, like, this whiff of a memory. It's weird. I can't really describe what it smells like. It's acrid, and it's like a burning. And there's a certain person I associate with this particular scent, and it's very strange. It's almost like being haunted by him. He was killed in a car crash, and it's from my childhood. It's so weird, though. Over the years, it's like he stopped coming to visit because I never smelled it again after I had kids. It's like he went away and never came back. It's such a strange feeling. Do you ever have like a phenomenon like that where there's this one thing that's associated only with one person, and it's like when you smell it, you know they're visiting?
Oh, yes. My aunt's husband, Bill, was a videographer for the local news, WMAR, Channel 2. It was great. They had a station wagon. It had all his camera equipment in it. We had great stories of, you know, him being on the scene for incredible news. He'd film at the White House. He'd film everywhere. But he had the antique heavy glass bottle of the old school Old Spice.
Ooh. Oh.
So when I smell that Old Spice, like, I know Bill is there because it's certainly not in my house. I can see that heavy, like, creamy white bottle with a little tiny stopper in it. And when I smell that, I know Bill's around.
Aww.
That's amazing. I love that. I thought it was just me. And my mother, whenever I would talk to her about it, thought I was insane. But that's another situation.
It's funny. At Mystic South last year or the year before, I taught a really neat class about ancestor veneration through smell. And it's talking about how to create those smells. You know, so taking the notes in the Old Bay, or Old Bay, I'm a Maryland person.
Old
Spice,
good though, too.
Not Old Bay. take those notes in the Old Spice and diffuse them in the house or create an anointing oil with it so I can have that connection with Bill and sort of invoke that connection rather than just wait for it to happen. When Peep died, the woman who raised me, Black Rose Botanical Magic is actually dedicated in her memory. When she passed, I was, of course, you know, you're crushed and you have all these emotions. But my childhood memories of her were of her getting out of the shower and putting on this Gina Tay body splash.
Oh my God,
so,
Gina Tay!
Yes! Yes!
I miss that stuff.
I'm that old.
So I
used to wear it all the time.
I did too.
I thought about buying a bottle and just having it to smell and connect. And I looked up the notes on Fragrantica.com. It's a perfume website that goes into notes and how people rate them and all this. And one of the first notes it lists is the rose. And so I said, oh, yeah, I can't do that. We don't want any hives. We don't want trips to the hospital. So what I did was I blended my own version of those notes that smelled like peep, but didn't have the rose in it. And so I could diffuse it in the house. I could use it on her ancestor altar. I could anoint candles with it. I could honor her memory in a safe place. An emotionally secure environment.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Mm. I love that.
You know, and I would not have guessed that scent had any rose in it whatsoever.
I wouldn't either. I smell the lavender, I smell the sandalwood and the jasmine, but I've never remembered the rose smell.
Oh.
Yeah. Huh.
That's so strange. I never knew it had rose. I would like Sis said, I would never have guessed it. I don't know if I would react the same way to it now then. And I love rose, don't get me wrong, but I don't know if it would smell the same to me now as an adult that it did when I was a lot younger. Do you change your feelings about fragrance over time?
Absolutely. Every scent that we encounter is filtered through that emotional filter, those emotional attachments. So even though it could be a different formula because it's been so long, if it doesn't smell the same, you're not going to have that same reaction to it. And especially for those people who have formed those emotional connections while being a smoker, it'll smell different. You may not have the emotional reaction to it because it's separated by time and space and the filter of a separate nose. It's a completely different nose than it was, you know, a year ago.
Yeah.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, your sense of smell is replaced every 60 days. It's a danger. You want to make sure that you're scenting and you're smelling things to keep you safe physically. So it's always renewing itself. It's always changing and rejuvenating itself. Being nose blind is a thing. Having a scent be so common in your space, like the smell of your house, you don't know what your house smells like because your brain throws it out. It says, we don't need this. It's not a danger to us. So we're just going to ignore this one thing.
Oh.
So it's the things that change that's why people who work in heavy chemical companies, they sort of start to lose their sense of smell. They have anosmia because they're burning out those cells. They can't regenerate as quickly as someone who doesn't smoke and doesn't work around heavy chemicals. Those things are a little bit more available to us.
That's
funny that you talk about that, you know, you don't smell things in your house like other people would. Because I'm constantly trying to infuse fragrance in the house. And it's like I walk into a room and I don't smell anything. And I'm like, do I need to bring more incense in here? Do I need to put another scented, you know, oil burner in here? Because I use a lot of oils and I do a lot of oil burning. Like in every room, there's something. And suddenly it's like I walk through and I don't smell anything. And I'm like, why don't I smell anything? And now I know why.
Yep. Same goes with the perfume that you're wearing. It's still there, it still smells, but your brain knows that it's not a danger to you, so it sort of writes it off. It's not important, we're going to get rid of it.
Ah.
That's why people apply too much of things. Now I understand, because their brain is telling them they're in any kind of trouble, so whatever they're wearing is perfectly safe, and that's how their brain interprets it, which is why I guess a lot of people put on too much. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they don't know that it's there. Unless they can smell it all the time, they forget.
Yeah.
Yeah. That explains quite a few of my customers. I work in a dry cleaner, and there are a few customers of ours that it's like you smell the bag before it starts coming in the door because they have that much perfume on, and it's overpowering. To the point it can almost make you sick, you know, and this
absolutely
is like not Yeah. And it's not on the person anymore. It's just permeated throughout the clothes. You know?
Mm-hmm. It's called the throw, how far your fragrance extends from your body. And
oh, yeah.
You
I think
you bring someone into your space. You don't want to punch them in the face.
Yeah. It's like, stop it.
Oh, my God. But I don't think people realize that. And there's really no creative way that I've come up with to, like, because I work with several folks from other places. And in some cultures, you know, they use fragrance instead of things that Americans use, for example. So it's kind of like it's definitely overpowering. And it's almost a religious well, it is a religious thing that they don't use certain chemicals on their body, which I can understand that. But some of these guys smell very, 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 very strong. Extremely strong.
It's like, oh,
know,
okay,
and,
little buddy, you like that.
Yeah, but then you realize, you know, from a religious standpoint, you know, listen, I know very little, so I can't judge or say anything. But you wonder why people do certain things, and you know the motivations are different for different cultures. So it's just cool to know it's not because they're trying to be overpowering. It's just that this is part of what they do. So that's cool.
Mm-hmm.
That's good to know too, because. Like, I'm always trying to make everything smell good, and it's like, I'm probably knocking people over in my house. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead, sis.
No, I was going to say, anytime I've been over, it's not overpowering. It's not.
Oh, that's
You're good.
Thanks. I forgot what I was going to say. But anyway, because I just want to make sure that I cover everything with Amy that she wants to cover. So let's talk about scent in relation to, because all of your books seem to be companions to each other, which is great. Is that a fairly accurate thing?
I like to keep the family vibe going.
The
way that everybody approaches scent is very personal, and the way that we can utilize that in a religious context is even more so, just making sure that we understand and we can connect with those things that not only make us feel special and fabulous, but can connect us to our spirituality. Whether it's something that you're drinking and experiencing at the same time, whether it's something you're burning, something you're, you know, diffusing. It's funny when you talk about the things that we burn, you know, jasmine's very popular. It's a very lovely, light floral scent, but don't burn it. I will give you a dollar. I will tell you those beautiful jasmine petals, when they burn, they smell like cat pee.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, learn from my mistakes, ladies. The things that I burn at home, the things that I experiment with, learn from my mistakes and do not burn jasmine if you can help it. Like, put a piece of a petal into your incense. Use the law of contagion to your benefit. Just put a piece in there and use that energetic without the actual smell. Absolutely.
Oh, wow. I had no idea. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it's funny. Like peppermint. I love peppermint tea, and I enjoy peppermint oils, especially as a migraine sufferer. But when you start to burn it, there's a very interesting thing that happens when you're inhaling the smoke. You have the cooling of the menthol, the mentholated pieces of that scent, but it's still hot and burning smelling because it's on fire. So it's very interesting sensation in your nose where the hot smoke and the cool menthol are fighting it out to see who's going to win.
Yeah. And here's, it's funny you mentioned peppermint oil because I can't do it. Like I can't burn that fragrance in like a scent burner because it's, I find it very confusing when it's supposed to be a cooling scent, but it's warm. My brain doesn't mm-hmm. know how to compute that out. So I don't
enjoy
it.
Yeah, it takes a second. There's a little like disconnect in your brain that says, I don't understand what's happening.
Yeah,
does not compute.
Yeah, but I don't enjoy it. It's a thing where I just can't, like if it was just mm-hmm. peppermint, I can't, my brain doesn't like it, so I don't like it, I guess. It doesn't compute in my brain well. Now, if peppermint
yeah.
is part of an herbal mix that I'm burning, that's another story completely. It comes across completely differently. I get it. My brain gets it, so I like it. But, yeah, when it's a little too confusing like that, like eucalyptus. Eucalyptus, in my head, is supposed to be cooling. For other people, they use it in, you know, like eucalyptus and spearmint. They mix together for, like, they warm it for inhaling to make your, you know, sinuses clear or calm down or whatever. And I just can't do it. It's like it's got to be cool. It's got to be a cool mist. I can't compute it as being warm.
Absolutely. When you pair it with things that are already camphorated, like lavender or
yeah.
rosemary, it really mellows it out, but it gets it to the point where it's enjoyable. It's no longer confusing.
Yeah, it has to be part of something else for sure. So, Amy, how did Blackthorn's Botanical Brews come about?
So this is my favorite. In creating Blackthorn's Botanical Magic, in going through and experiencing this journey of scent over the time it took me to write this massive book, I had in the background been working on a cookbook for my tea shop, Blackthorn's Botanical Magic. Translated, so we have Blackthorn Hoodie blends, everything starts to meld together. And during an interview with Chris Oropello and Tara McGuire for Down at the Crossroads, we started talking about the way I process smell, the way I've written these recipes. It's very experiential. It just dives in, creates this whole aroma and this whole body experience of these magical oils. So we start talking about how to create that experience in a drink. When I blend teas for Blackthorn Hoodoo blends, I took
uh-huh.
my 20 years of working with hoodoo oils and recipes and creating those, and I translated them into things that were edible and things that were potable, like blood orange and lemongrass, and taking those materials and creating really lovely teas with them. And so mm-hmm. after people started listening to this interview, they're like, okay, but how do you make this? How do you create a tea? How do you do this?
Right.
And I mm-hmm. wanted to be able to explain to people, I wanted to empower people to figure out, like, these are the magical equivalents. These are the things that taste good together. These are the things that not only are inherently magical, but they have the volatile oils, so you can experience it while you can smell the tea, you can taste it. There's a whole ritual experience to it. I wanted to empower people to do that for themselves. Yes, you can buy my tea, and it's fabulous, and I'm very happy about it. But I want to make sure people are empowered to do that for themselves. I want you to paint with scent. I want you to experience these flavors. I want you to get in touch with your magic. You know, we spend so much time glued to our screens and talking about it with other people through social media, and that's fabulous. But what gets to the point where we get disconnected from our practice and doing something that involves your as many senses as possible gets you not
yeah.
only in touch with your ritual practice, but reminds you why you're a witch, reminds you why you're a practitioner, reminds you why you do this work.
Yeah.
Wow.
Huh.
Yeah. And I'll tell you what, I have been feeling very disconnected for a while now, and I know it's the stress of everything else around me, and that's going to be really helpful. because the more involved you are in every aspect of it, the more you stay connected to it. So that makes perfect sense. Wow.
And it's about ownership.
No, it is about ownership, and it's about being a part of every aspect instead of letting somebody else necessarily make it for you. And quite frankly, I love your teas, and so that's always going to be, you know, I don't know that anybody can ever blend something the same way that somebody else does in that regard. So my feeling is that you would still need to be making your products too, even when people have the ability to create their own thing. It's still going to be different, isn't it?
Exactly. That's one of the reasons people said, well, you don't have to share like your proprietary recipes, but it's like, no, even if I told you, even if you look at the ingredients of what is in a tea, it will smell 180 degrees different than what I've got blended here. Everyone has their own niche. Everyone has their own, I like a little bit of more lemon in mine. You know, everyone has something that makes them feel whole and experiences it in a way that is empowering. So you can say, these are the things that I put in X, but in giving them the tools to sit down, play Mad Tea Science, and come up with things that are not only smell incredible, but have that intention that you can put towards it. So when you're having your morning tea, you can actually make it that ritual that I want you to experience. In creating Black Urns and Hoodoo Blends, I left an angry job and wanted to clear out all that space. I want you to turn your morning ritual into a ritual. I want you to put intention into the things that you're doing all the time. Our lovely friend Byron Ballard says it's called practicing witchcraft. So practice it. Practice making your tea and infusing it with the intention you want that day. You've got bills that are coming due. Grab some tea and make it a prosperity blend. You've got a cruddy meeting at work that you don't want to go to. Give yourself a little bit of extra energy, both through something caffeinated and through your intention. Can't do caffeine? Put that magical energy in it to it. There's so many ways to use
it.
I want empowering people. It's all I want to ever do.
That's awesome.
That's awesome.
I love it. But so when can we expect to see this book?
I was originally told January 2021. Someone has recently mentioned it might come out sooner than that.
Yay.
We will see. As soon as I have a firm date, as soon as it's up for pre-orders, I will let you know, because I know you're going to want to get your hands on it.
Yes, ma'am.
Certainly.
Are you going to be at Mystic South this coming year?
Yeah, of course. It's my...
Yay.
I absolutely want to be there. I want to teach. I want to schmooze with my people. I need my Atlanta family. I need some hugs and some space and some just enjoying my people. I mean, Stacy comes up from Florida. I get people, you know, I come down from Delaware. People come out from California. Like, we just all meet in the middle and enjoy each other's company. And I absolutely can't wait for the next Mystic South.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Ryan's the only one who has the shortest drive.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Heather.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
But so
yeah,
let me ask, by the way, I should have said that to you earlier. Bless you.
I dress for the occasion. I'm wearing olive green and a lovely cranberry.
Ooh.
Aww.
I love those colors
always
together.
Appropriately festive without being garish.
Yes.
Of course not. You are the epitome of beauty and taste, my love. Always. Always.
You.
I'm just a charmer.
You really are. tell you, when I started to write Sacred Smoke, it took me probably 2 weeks to actually start putting words on paper. I was terrified of this book. I wanted to. It's still one. It's hard. I was anxious and I was nervous because I wanted to empower people to experiment. You know, set things on fire, basically. You know, create those smells, create those smokes. But I didn't want to do it in a way that anyone felt was appropriative. So I talked about that in the very, very beginning of the book. Because I actually got some great feedback on botanical magic because I don't use the S word in botanical magic anywhere. I don't see smudging anywhere in botanical magic other than in the index glossary where it says, hey, this is not a thing. So I wanted to read for you. If you've picked up anything using sacred smoke before opening this book, you may have heard it called smudging. Indigenous people and First Nations peoples have an indigenous practice called smudging that is sacred to them. If you're not a member of an indigenous tribe or trained in that practice, it won't be smudging, period. It's just smoke cleansing. You can call it smoke bathing, smoke rituals. You get the idea. We're here to build our own practice without the appropriation. With indigenous women I've spoken to about this project, those lessons have been many. Every culture has its own practices for sacred smoke, and they deserve their own time and attention. There's room for respect and growth. We talked about the Egyptians. I talked about Khufu. You know, Egyptians burned incense 3 times a day, morning, noon, and at dusk. And it's one of the very first sacred smokes that I started working with was building my own Khufu, was creating my own Khufu. I still have some of my very first batch because you go to put a smidge of something in and a whole clump falls out. My Khufu smells more like cinnamon pancakes than it does Khufu because there's so much cinnamon in it. You go to put a dash of red wine in and you get a glug instead of a splash. You have to add more of your frankincense. So it's such a whole practice. It's so immersive because you're getting your actual hands into the fragrance, into the oils, and really making it do something. One of my favorite books was it's just called Khufu because it's a 300-page book on recipes and the way people have interpreted this practice for thousands of years. And it's so neat to be able to experience it and practice making it.
Wow. And it's like one of my favorite things. It's amazing.
It really is so gorgeous.
Mm-hmm. But it can, I mean, as with everything else, there's so many different versions of it. And I grew up with one particular one made by one particular store in one particular place. And now, the store still exists, but it's not in the same space anymore. And if they even make it, it's not being made by the same people anymore. And I have no idea if they're using the same formula. I mean, it's just one of those, well, it's just like everything, I suppose. Different hands in it make it different and make it someone else's, you know? So, I mean, I fully appreciate that, but I probably should give it a try. I don't know. I need your book. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say one of my favorite places to, if I'm going to buy it instead of make it, one of the vendors from Sacred Space, who should be there for Between the Worlds and Sacred Space in April, Mythosferia, this fabulous artisan, comes to us from Glastonbury. So she makes it everything by hand, and she actually sells the little bricks. You can, break a piece off and burn it in your incense holder, and it's the real deal. It's wrapped in foil and it's very carefully created and measured. Her Khufu is it's gorgeous. If I don't have the time or the energy to make it myself and age it, I just make sure I have hers on hand, and it's fantastic. She's got an Etsy shop full of all sorts of neat things. She gets waters from, you can buy water from Chalice Well, or you can get different woods and plant material wands that you can't get anywhere else. I got a mugwort wand from her 2 years ago that is, oh, it gives me chills. This most recent year, I got a wand that's, you know, a foot and a half long. It's poppy. It's probably thick around. It's fatter around than a quarter, maybe a half dollar, and it's poppy.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
She's from Glastonbury. She comes to the U.S. once a year for Sacred Space, and I just buy up all of her goodies.
Oh my
God. But yeah, you can shop around with her from Etsy.
Really? Boy. Okay, we're going to need that link.
I will absolutely send it to you. She's just amazing.
That's awesome, because I'm not going to be able to make it to Between the World Sacred Space this year. I planned on it, but it doesn't look like it's going to happen. So, yeah, I'm going to need to place an order. I'm
I will make sure to hook you up.
Thank you. So we are looking forward to getting Blackthorn's Botanical Brews in the very near future. A year is not that far. I know it seems like it is, but it's not. So where will you be appearing in the upcoming season? We've got to make sure people know where to get you.
Absolutely. My schedule is always updated at amyblackthorn.com. I've got tour information that's ongoing. My next appearance is Between the Worlds and Sacred Space, because I was on tour from August to December, and I am tired.
Oh, my
so
God.
So I will be Between the Worlds and Sacred Space. Yeah, I had maybe 2 weekends off in those, seems like 6 months. I know it's only 4 months, but it seemed like six.
I was going to say, this year, everything seems like 6 months.
Yes.
Wow.
Bless Byron. I don't know how she's writing a book and touring, and she's amazing. We just need to make that happen. So, yes, my next event is Between the Worlds and Sacred Space. I'm also doing Mystic South. And my new one this year, I am incredibly excited about, is going to be in Olympia, Washington. It's tarot for personal and personal transformation, and there's another word for it, in Olympia, Washington this year on Halloween. Halloween is a full moon on a Saturday this year. So Halloween on a full moon, and it's a leap year. Like everything is coming together for this, this Washington trip. And I'm really excited. I am the embodiment of the Justice card. That makes me very, very happy. So I will be representing the Justice card.
Oh,
that
man.
So
that's
awesome.
Going to be awesome.
I can't wait.
You know, Amy,
it's
so funny. I was talking to Dorothy Morrison last night, and I was saying, you know, this is how I met Amy. I met Amy when we were doing that pagan online paper, Sunday Stew. That's how you and I actually, that's a long time ago now.
It really was. That's, maybe 4 years, 5 years?
It's been quite a while. And
did Dorothy tell you how we met? Did Dorothy tell you how we met?
How you met Dorothy? No. Tell me.
Oh, my goodness. So I was just the luckiest duck. In about a month and a half after Hurricane Katrina, Dorothy and M.R. Sellers and a bunch of other authors and personalities got together and decided to start doing auctions to benefit Hurricane Katrina victims.
Wow.
So they were selling off books and materials and artwork and all this really incredible stuff. It was every single penny going to Hurricane Katrina victims. And it was really important to me. Like, I was gathering boxes of supplies, going to the pharmacy and getting Band-Aids and water and, you know, sending as much as I possibly could. So when I saw that they were raising money, I thought, like, not only, A, is this an incredible work that, you know, I felt moved to do, but I could support the community that I wanted to make sure, but I could also have some fabulous gifts just for donating. It wasn't the other way around. I wasn't buying something and then, oh, yeah, you know, okay, it'll go somewhere good. I was just really involved and really invested in making sure that people could get as much help and care that they could. So one of the materials that Dorothy put up for auction was a Book of Shadows. It was hers. It had material that wasn't published in any of her books. It's most of a ream of paper thick, it's printed on parchment, and she autographed it, and she put pictures in it. It's just incredibly well done, and I want to win the winning bid. And she said, okay, how can I make it out to you? Fast forward to 2007, I was the personal assistant, personal bodyguard to someone who was invested in a local witchy shop that was redoing some of its materials, Mystical Voyage. And so he asked me to contact Dorothy and see if she was available to come to the grand opening. I got had her email from this back and forth that we did, and she wasn't able to come for that day, but we were able to schedule her for a couple months out. She was obviously a very, very busy woman, and she said, I'm thrilled. I want to come out. I want to invest. I want to check out what everyone is doing. And it was the best visit. It really was. The number of people that were able to come through the doors of Mystical Voyage, Christopher Penzack visited, Dorothy Morrison visited.
Oh, wow.
We had just lots of really lovely people who were able to come in through the years. Anne Mara, that was a highlight of my time there. She is just the loveliest woman. And so Dorothy came out to Mystical Voyage, and I actually I had placed all of her materials in a 4-inch 3-ring binder in little plastic protective sleeves. So I brought the tote that carries it around, and she was like, this is so great. We were so tickled to get to hang out and talk over that the course of the weekend. It was really not only impactful, but empowering. She's just an amazing woman.
Yeah.
She really is.
We love us some Dorothy.
Oh,
we
you can't not love Dorothy.
Yeah.
I was
but
really
we love
excited.
Us from you, too.
Yes.
Well, yes, but there's love isn't pie. You can always have more love.
Yeah.
I was really excited when I was asked to do the foreword for the re-release of Dorothy's fabulous book. That will be re-released in May.
Yes.
Someone correct me if I'm wrong.
May 1st.
Oh, good. So in creating that forward, I was just overjoyed. So I can't wait to see the cover that Sabrina the Inkwitch did is marvelous. I mean, every single part of that is going to be incredible.
Yeah, we were very excited when we found out you were writing the new forward for it. Because I didn't know that until recently. I was, I think my mouth chopped up and like, really? Yay! You know, we were talking about
it. Honestly, was it?
Was it a highlight for you?
Oh, yes. My entire life up to this point, it was definitely a highlight.
Aww. Oh, you're funny. You're funny. You have a pretty illustrious career yourself, madame. I would not discount any of your accomplishments. It's not a contest. You're fabulous in your own right. And we love you. We love being around you. We love talking to you, seeing you, reading you, all of it. So I'm very excited about now this year getting two of your books, one of your books, because the other one won't be released till the following Mystic South, or perhaps earlier, which means I'll just get an autographed copy that time. But I'm very excited about filling out my Amy Blackthorne collection. I think it's so exciting.
Yay. It's funny. My proposal for Sacred Space that I have written, actually that might turn out to be my next proposal to my publishers, because
wow.
I felt so strongly about it. Like I apparently can't take any minutes off. I've got to be writing and moving and doing, because I've got so many ideas that I want to share with everyone.
That's awesome. And I think that straight, some of us struggle for one damn idea, to be honest with you. So, well, I mean, it may sound funny, but it's actually true. You know, we look to our new writers, and when I say new, I mean people who have been writing in the last 10 years, because, you know, a lot of the folks that used to write no longer write, and they were, you know, we're in a period where things are now available, and we were talking about this last night and last week. Back in the day when I was coming up, you had, if you were lucky enough to find a good bookstore, you were lucky enough to find some good books. If everything was not informational deluge, it took a lot of work to find good material. And, you know, we're now in a generation where materials are available, and having good writers is important and not always as easy to find as you think. We're lucky enough to know a great crop of writers, but there's the market is flooded with stuff that may not be as high quality as other people. I'm not naming names, mm-hmm. I'm not pointing fingers, I'm just saying, like anything else, there's room for a whole lot of crap, there's room for a whole lot of good. You got to be able to discern which is which. And you'll find that there's a lot of one and done. You know, people write a witchcraft book and then you never hear from them again. And those are the people that I'm a little more concerned about. You know,
absolutely.
What I mean?
When
it's like I'm more interested in talking to folks that have more to say than just, here's my one book, you know, I'll sell a few copies and then figure out what else I want to do with my life, or they, you know, it's the only idea they've ever had. You know what I mean?
I do. And the number of authors who leave witchcraft nonfiction for urban fantasy or sci-fi, I know that they can make more money. It's, you have to go, your path tells you where your life is headed. But it's some really incredible writers out there that have made amazing books that are nonfiction. And it's always sad when they leave to go pursue another form of writing to make sure that their bills are paid.
Yeah.
And it is important. Yes, I agree. It's important, you know, if this is what you've dedicated your life to, you know, it's very important to support the people that, you know, are the people for you. Not everyone is, not everything is for everyone, as I've often said. But, you know, I do get concerned about the influx of, you know, people just putting something out there to rehash things and just make a few bucks. You know, it's amazing to me how a pretty cover can sell things, you know?
Oh yeah.
Hey, Amy,
yeah,
do you have a few extra minutes to spend with us, or do you
of
need
course.
To wrap? Oh,
no,
okay,
no, no,
cool.
I'm good.
Oh, okay, good. We're kind of not done talking to you.
Yeah.
Sorry. I know I said only an hour, and then we started getting involved in stuff, so it's going to be a little longer there, kiddos. But you know, I'd like to know from you, you know, who influenced you a bit, you know, in wanting to take your path and your writing, because you're a beautiful, beautiful writer. You're one of the most beautiful. See, here's the thing. If you have not seen Amy Blackburn in person and experienced her, she is, it's hard for me to translate into words, but the warmth and love and grace and beauty, internal and external, cannot be overstated, because she is just one of those people that you want to be near her all the time when you meet her. And you'll see that, because she's always got people all over the place standing around her, just wanting to be in her airspace. Because it's a beautiful airspace. You make everything feel more warm and loving.
I think we could all have and benefit from just taking a minute to understand that everyone's dealing with something. And giving that space and air is, one, it's so incredibly important, and two, you have no idea the impact that you can make for another person. I try to compliment 10 strangers a day if I'm out in the world that day. The number of people who have said, if I was on my way to jump off a bridge, and if one person had smiled at me, I wouldn't have done it. Those encounters mean so much, and you can't measure the impact that you have on another person. So just trying to not be a jerk is an act of rebellion at this point. It's so easy because we have the anonymity of the internet and social media to be a jerk and feel like you have no repercussions for it. But turning that around and expressing, a genuine feeling to another human being is impactful, it's incredible, and you have no way of measuring or knowing what that does for someone else.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Because, a crossword from even someone who you don't think is quote-unquote important in your life can really bring down your whole day.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
I really want to make sure that I can give that to someone else, even if it's once a day. I spent this afternoon helping a woman at my grocery store find the perfect gift for a friend of hers. And she's like, you didn't have to do that. I appreciate you. It's like making that connection for someone else, even if they never know that, Sue came to me and had, Sandy help her. Even if they never find out, it makes it worthwhile to me, just because they knew that I had the appearance and the availability to make sure that they had what they needed for their friends. And now that we have a new witchy shop here in Delaware, I was even more overjoyed to support my local community, especially to someone who isn't witchy. She's very, very Christian. And she was open-minded enough to say, hey, I know this is something you do. Can you give me a hand? Like, not only we get a little good feeling out of that, but being able to show someone who is not witchy, is not woo at all, that we're all just people was really great. She got to go in her very first witchy store and found out that everything's really chill. We just sort of hang out and enjoy each other's company, and you're welcome. It doesn't matter what your religious path is, what your religious affiliation is. Just like everybody else, don't be a jerk.
Yeah. That's awesome.
Yeah. It's too much jerkiness. And it's so easy to be nice instead of being a jerk. I mean, but some people don't
think that.
Some people have an easier time being jerky.
Yep. Doesn't cost anything to be nice.
Yeah, I know.
Exactly.
It's so strange. But, here's the thing. I don't think, when we're out in a public arena like Mystic South, I don't think anybody ever intends to be jerky. I think everybody intends to be really, groovy and cool with each other. But there's some people that have that extra cool and that extra welcoming vibe. And you're one of those people. And it's not that other people aren't loving and welcoming. It's you're different. It's a different, very different thing with you. I can't describe it. You have to come and see her in public. You have to take her classes. You have to buy her books. You have to talk to her in person. There's just no way to describe it.
One of my best compliments that I get as both a writer and as a person is that people, when they read my books, they can hear my voice. I'm a very conversational writer. I want to draw you in and help you feel like I'm right there teaching just for you. And that was a huge compliment to me.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, definitely.
That is you all over. You're just this amazing source of warmth and light. You're kind of like, I don't know, you're like the right combination of the moon and the sun. I don't know if I'm saying that right. Do you know what I'm saying?
It's the balance.
Yeah. It's just great. You're just great. I love you. I know it. I can't help it.
Well, I think you're both amazing.
Aw, well, thank you. Sweet. We love you. Yeah, I only have the one book right now, and I got it signed, which I'm so happy about. But yeah, I can't wait to fill out my collection because there's there's a lot of amazing writers, but there's certain books that just kind of hit you, like it's kind of, okay, that makes sense. You know, connecting the dots of, okay, I can't make this fit into this. What is the missing aspect? You know, and I think you kind of fill in that aspect, you know, among being just a beautiful person in general. You know, so thank you.
I was really excited. Thank you. I just, the number of people who say, like, even as a practitioner of 15, 20, 25 years that are still finding things that they've never thought about even in Sacred Smoke, it's designed to be very beginner, but they're like, I would never have thought of that in a million years. And that is super exciting for me because when you've been practicing for a million years, it gets hard because you need something to reinvigorate your practice. You need something to spark that because you feel like everything is, I've been there, done that. If I can do that for someone through my writing, like, my work is done.
Yeah.
Aww.
Well, no, we hope that's not the case, that your work is done. We hope you keep going.
Well, yeah.
I will keep writing for the rest of my life.
Yeah, it fascinates me. Writers fascinate me because they always come up with something new to say, and it's like, I don't know how you do that, you know? I don't know. Maybe it's because I am locked into a day job and locked into other things, but I'm just always fascinated by the writer mind and how, you know, somebody says, did 25,000 words today, boom!
I know.
I don't know if I say that much when I'm not on the air, to be honest with you.
It's funny, the neatest and probably most, I want to say unsettling, but it's not quite the right vibe for what I want to go with. For writing your first book and doing, you know, people say, what advice can you give? The weirdest thing that I experienced in the whole of writing my first book, you know, you write forever, but you're in a room by yourself. You know, I'm in my office, I'm screaming at my four walls. You know, you go back and forth with your editor, you know, a few times. Blackthorn's Botanical Magic got edited 12 times. Like, it's an encyclopedia, it's got all this material in it, 12 different sets of eyes. But you're in a room by yourself. It's yours.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just you and the computer. It's very, very personal. And then when it's published, it goes out into the world. It flies the coop, and it goes out into the world. And you no longer have possession of it. It's no longer yours.
Yeah.
It's sort of everyone's. And so people can inform their own practices, and they can have their own experiences with it, and it triggers their own memories from when they were a kid, and they want to share that with you. And it's so... It changes your life because it's something that was very personal. It was just you staring at your screen and hallucinating for 3 years, you know, 6 months, whatever it was.
Wow.
But when other people can share that with you, it changes your life. It really does, because the trust that people give you when they share that with you,
Oh yeah.
It's so the vulnerability. It's really impactful. I can't say enough about it. It's beautiful and people say, oh, you know, I'm sorry, I don't want to bother you, but and it's like I want to share that connection with other people. I want for them to feel comfortable bringing forth that energy.
That's awesome.
you're like the best writer ever, because you're just wanting to be part of the world and making it a better place, as opposed to, you know, there are writers. Listen, I believe everybody, for the most part, has very good intentions, and for the most part, they do. But, you know, the fact that you are so involved, most writers write and send it out, and they release it, and that's it, and then they move on to the next thing. But you're so involved with every aspect, even after you're done writing. You know, your enjoyment of hearing how somebody has benefited from something you've said or done, and, you know, it just... it makes everybody happy. It makes the person who had the experience happy. It makes you happy. It's you're more of a sharing. I don't know how to put this. You enjoyed the share experience after the fact of writing it, which is
absolutely
really cool. Because a lot of the time when you meet a writer and, you know, you get your autograph and you say, this really meant a lot to me, and you could tell for a moment that they're into that, but then it's like they're tired and you know, they want to move on to the next person, because what they're really thinking about is, you know, going home and getting a nice hot bath. And it's not because they're not enjoying being around their people, but it's, you know, sometimes people get really weary from being on the road and stuff. But every time I see you and every time I talk to you, you are joyful and interested, and, you know, you have this genuine love for people that it's just different. You're just different, okay? You're different from other people. I don't know how else to say it.
She sprinkles magic wherever she goes.
Yeah, it's not just it's the human connection, though. It's more than just the magic. Well, and human connection is magic, of course, but it's a different vibe. This has to be, Amy Blackburn has to be one of those genuine. That's what it is. You are one of the most genuine people I have ever had the pleasure to know in my entire life. That's what I wanted to say. It's true.
I adore you. Thank you so much for saying that.
Oh, no, it's rare to find genuine people. Like I said, tons of fabulous people, great people, kind people, but genuine good to the heart is rare, and you are one of those people. It's very, very true. But anyway, on that note, I am going to shut up now, because I have fangirled out so much lately, and...
I didn't get to answer your question. You even asked me. I was just like, oh yeah, that's awesome. You asked who my writing influences were and how
I sort of
shaped
where
I was going.
Dorothy
Morrison has had a huge impact on what I do and how I do it. I have all of her books. But it's funny that I don't keep her books because they're that good. I buy a copy and then someone says, I need something, and I hand a copy of whatever book it is to them and say, you need this in your life, and then I go buy another copy for myself. I've probably given out 30 copies of Utterly Wicked, because it's empowering and it teaches people that you don't have to take any crap from anybody else, and this is how you take care of yourself.
Yeah,
I was selling Dorothy's book to people 6 months before it was released, just because I was so excited about it. I'm like, right now, here, get on the list, sign up here. You can pay someone at the register, just buy this book. Trust me, it's like 6 months before it was released, because I was that excited about it.
Aww.
One of the best things as a writer that I found was you're going to think it's funny, was working at Lush.
Working I love Lush.
They're amazing. But working for a company that was handmade, and they had very strong ethical standards, but they encourage to the nth degree. They don't really advertise. The budget that most companies spend on advertising, they spend on teaching their people. So they really stress emotive language. They want you to get in touch with how something makes you feel, it's not just about how something smells. When, this time of year, it's insane. Everyone's going to the mall and clubbing each other for a parking space, and it's really painful if you're an introverted person.
Yeah.
So I don't ask people, what kind of perfume do you like? And they say, I like, CK1, or they'll name some random something that's popular. We don't have that. We have things that are blended by hand by a person, usually Mark Constantine. I ask them, what do you want to feel like? Or if you were a color, what color would you be? Getting people to think around their very narrow focus to get them to widen their scope is how you get people in touch with themselves. You get them to close their eyes and experience a scent rather than looking at the bottle and deciding, oh, that's a weird blue. I don't like how that smells because I don't like blue. Getting them away from that and saying, I want to feel magenta with glitter today. Perfect. This smells magenta to me. This is very shiny and very sparkly. I can tell you how elevated you'll feel. I can tell you how grounded you'll feel. And that was one of the most beneficial things for my career that I could have done. And I spent 5 years there before I went full time with my security company. And understanding the way people experience scent was the best thing, especially for writing Blackthorn's Botanical Magic. Getting people in touch with their sense of smell, because people have a very narrow scent vocabulary in the United States. They know Play-Doh, oatmeal, coffee, and bad. That's pretty much it. Magical practitioners, we can add incense and musty robes, but we have a very narrow view of what scents are. So I can't expect them to say, I'd like something with a cardamom base and maybe a lemongrass top note, and I want to feel grounded while I'm wearing it. You can't expect people to just pull these words out and these feelings out. So the first thing that we learned as kids is your color. So asking them to reach back and say, what color do you want to be today? I want to be olive green. Okay, I can do that. Like we can make something happen that makes you feel grounded and still supported with just a little bit of lightness, with an earthy smell, like that's going to last a long time. Like all of these things are what I hear when you say olive green. I smell colors.
That's
so when
awesome.
I'm creating a perfume or I'm creating something in the diffuser, if the colors of the smells clash, I know that these perfumes, these essential oils are not going to go together. It's not going to smell right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I have an advantage. Like my high priest, Brian, says, Amy knows how people are supposed to smell. I think that's one of the happiest things anyone's ever said about me. It's true. I know how people are supposed to smell.
That's impressive, though.
Yeah, it is.
But
I wanted to also ask you, if somebody tells you what their favorite fragrances are, is it possible to determine what kind of a person that is?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yes. Absolutely. 1,000%. When someone says your best dude friend still wears the Dracar Noir he wore in high school, like,
oh,
I know
God.
He it's that connection. I know that they want something dark, has some brighter notes in it, will last a little longer, but they're armor conservative and they're set voices because they're wearing something they've been wearing since high school. They like the sameness. They want to know that things are comfortable. So I don't make any wild leaps in creating something that some, you know, they may not understand the smell of. But I might stick more with like an oak moss. So I could bring in that green oak moss for the, anyone who has never smelled it. It smells like leather and violet.
Ooh.
It's just love oak moss.
I get goosebumps talking about it. I love it. But so I can make little steps outside their comfort zone, like including something like an oak moss, because it's grounding and it's connective, but it's not way out in left field. They don't understand what it is and what they're smelling, because if people can't understand what they're smelling, it confuses them to the point where they won't like the smell of the cologne or the perfume, just because they don't understand what they're smelling. If they can identify the notes. And it usually goes a little bit easier for them, but if it confuses them, they won't wear it.
Huh.
Yeah. That's true.
I have a quick question. Well, I don't know. Maybe.
Of course.
Hopefully it's quick. So my favorite perfume is something called Funeral Home from Demeter Fragrance. And I absolutely love this scent. It doesn't last long enough for me. I would love to be able to, like, recreate it as an incense. Now, the major notes, you can actually smell mahogany in it.
Yeah.
It's lots of white flowers. And,
I see there's some carnation in there.
Yeah, I love carnation. I love that peppery flower smell. You know, and there's actually a bit of, like, it's weird how they did it, but it actually does smell like one of the rugs in a funeral home. And I absolutely love this scent. What would you recommend, like, trying to recreate similar?
Carnations have a very clove-heavy scent to them.
Yeah.
So I would start with a clove base. I would add some... if you can find vanilla pod, that's great. The vanilla will add that woody smell to it. Real vanilla does not smell like Yankee Candle vanilla cookies. Smells like old books.
Yeah.
You get that warm, papery, woody note to it. I might add a bit, just a pinch of cedar wood instead of cedar leaf to create that rich mahogany scent to it. If you work with Palo Santo, it's, you know, that we've had some problems with sourcing because of the fires in the Amazon, and talk about that.
Yeah.
You can consider shaving a little bit of that in there. It has that resiny, dark note to it. And then I would probably add white flower. Lavender aside, because lavender acts more like a seed. Flowers don't smell the same when they're burning as they do when they're growing. So I wouldn't actually include any actual flowers. Let's see, clove. Oh, and you know what? Just a pinch of black pepper will actually, it'll sweeten up the smell, but it'll add a layer to the spice for the clove. Not, you know, just make sure you burn it in a well-ventilated area. And I might add just a hint of nutmeg. Nutmeg will really balance out the roundness of that flower of the carnation and get some of that cottony of the fibers of the rug.
Oh, that's perfect. Mm. Thank you so much.
Of course. These are the kind of scent exercises that I adore.
Okay, cool. Because I was like, I didn't want you to give anything away, but, you know, buy the books, but... Yeah, I absolutely love the scent, but I can't make it last long enough, you know.
What I also would recommend is putting on lotion before you put on your perfume, because you're hydrating the skin, so the perfume isn't trying to rehydrate your skin and work. So by providing a layer of moisture on your skin, it'll last longer.
Oh, I would have never thought about that. See, look at you offering valuable information. just, I love you. Thank you so much.
Happy to help.
Yeah, that's, no, that's brilliant. I would have never correlated that. Never.
And when it doesn't have to fight each other, you'll notice it lasts a lot longer. One of my dear, dear favorite perfumes is Dana O'Shea from Black Phoenix Alchemy Lab. It's very creamy almond, and it's sweet almond. So you get the tingle in the back of your nose, almond is such a foodie dream of mine. But my skin chemistry eats it up. So I'm like, okay, this is one of my favorite things. How can I, and by even with an oil base, you know, just add a little bit of hydration to your skin before you put it on, and you'll get hours longer reach for it.
Okay. No, that's perfect. That's perfect. Actually, you know, that one of my favorite lotions is Jergens, and it's because it's reminiscent of smells that when I was a kid, is the cherry almond. You know, it's
my mom
just
used to wear it too,
Jergens. Yeah, I love it.
I can't stand olives. That's why I hate Jergens with a passion.
I'm sorry, babe. So I don't wear it around you.
No, you never do. It's from childhood as well. And I have nothing but gross memories from it. So I stay far away from the Jergens. My thing is a lot simpler. I'm into honeysuckle mixed with bergamot. And that's my thing, with a few little touches of other things. And I just ordered my first Black Phoenix perfume oil the other night. So I'm very excited.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's funny. You can tell when I like you because I will make sure I change my scent preferences when I'm around you. I keep a little catalog in the back of my head. I have a friend who cannot stand, absolutely will not come up, truly upsetting the smell of amber, which I adore.
Oh,
so I make
visiting that I edit the perfumes that I keep on hand. In my car, there's probably 10 perfumes at any given time. I make sure I edit my perfume stash so that way it's not upsetting or traumatic. And probably it was 2 years ago, she said, you know, Amy loves you when she's controlling that perfume the way that it affects you. She said, but also don't get on her bad side because she could do the opposite. She could like just only wear things that are affecting you, and you have no idea what's happening. It's like, oh, I never thought of that.
Yeah.
Tiger
Lily, huh?
This is now all I wear.
Exactly.
Oh my gosh.
I love
that's
it.
Hilarious.
That's another book idea.
Oh my gosh.
We need that book too.
You can control things I didn't even think about that. You can actually subtly control people by your fragrance. That's true.
Yeah.
I like it. Nice.
Make them run. And I really hate to say this, but we are about almost 2 minutes out. Yeah, I just got the 90-second in my ear.
Oh, my gosh. So, Amy,
I know.
Is there anything else you want to say before we wrap up?
Yes. My new project for 2020 is going to be releasing a line of magical candles on blackthornhoodieblends.com, and they will correlate with botanical magic, and they'll correlate with my tea shop, and I can't wait to show you what I've been working on. So keep an eye on Amy Blackthorn, author, on Facebook, and blackthornhoodieblends.com, and on Facebook, and as soon as they are ready to be released into the wild, you'll see me start posting on my public pages to tell you, hey, come and check out some spell candles with really incredible fragrance to them.
Oh, I can't wait. I'm so excited.
It's been in the works for a year and a half, and I'm I'm glad it's finally coming to the point where they'll be released soon.
Awesome.
Oh my God.
So we will be posting that on our page.
Yes.
So,
oh
and there's,
my.
I have 20 new TEs that are scheduled throughout the release for 2020. So 20 in 2020, looking forward to expanding my presence in your lives.
Oh,
that's awesome. Oh, we're so excited. So excited. So many things to buy. I need a better job so I can afford all these things I need to buy.
Wow.
I had a wonderful time.
Well, thank
you
so much for coming. Always. Every single time.
And thank you for staying. And thanks for hanging out
of
a
course.
Little extra for
yeah.
us. That's awesome. I love it. I will rebook you as soon as we're off the air. So.
Yay!
Yes. And thank you so much for the tip. I appreciate the you know, I'm going to try that recipe out this weekend. So thank you.
We know how it works. Of course.
Yeah, definitely. You know what? If I make enough, I'll send you some.
You're a doll. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, we love you.
All right, bye, love.
And thank you so much for coming on.
I enjoy you, and I'll talk to you soon. All right,
I'll talk to you in five.
Bye.
Yeah.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. All right. Gosh, I love her so much. She's amazing.
I know.
What a good
so
person.
Sweet. She really
the best
she
person.
Has like yeah, she and this amazing aura. You are lucky to be around her, so.
Seriously.
All right, you ready to wrap this?
Wrap. We will see you
all right.
after we will see you actually after the new year. We
yeah.
are off on Friday. We are off on the 3rd. We will be back on the 10th. So everyone have a blessed Yule. Everyone have a blessed New Year's. And we will see you on the flip side of the year.
All right. We love you guys. Have a safe holiday.
Love you.
We'll see you next year.
Bye. Bye.